Now, here's a sticky question. Is rationing care to elderly or terminal patients ethically or legally appropriate under any circumstances? We have two guests today who will attempt to answer that question on this edition of the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, visit practicalbioethics.org. practicalbioethics.org. Harvey Tettelbaum is a partner with Hush Blackwell Law Firm in Jefferson City, Missouri. And Sandy Silva is a program associate with the Center for Practical Bioethics. So, Harvey, let's start with you. It's always a sticky question when it comes to limiting care for any population. But when it comes to the elderly and the terminally ill, the answer starts with numbers and demographics.
Correct. And the demographics show that the cost for taking care of people in the last 6 weeks of their life is so substantial. It costs the Medicare program about $82 billion a year. And the issue is really whether culturally we're going to change in this country from a death-denying society to a society which really accepts death as part of life.
The numbers still are pretty remarkable. People over age 85 will double to 10 million by the year 2030. A quarter of the total Medicare budget is spent on services for beneficiaries. So those numbers are clashing, and we're going to be reaching a point of decision on this, correct?
Correct. And it became a political question last year when the issue of the what Sarah Palin characterizes death panels was something that was taken out of the legislation. It would have merely required physicians to inform patients of one of the many choices that patients that have, and one of those choices is palliative care, which is becoming much more popular as it becomes much better known to the elderly population.
The clinical equation to this is something that's an issue as well. Nearly half of all patients receive unwanted medical treatments. The doctors don't really know how to engage in conversation about these issues, and that complicates the matter even further, doesn't it?
It certainly does. The way I characterize it is everyone knows they're going to die, they just don't think they're going to die. And so as a consequence, they continually try to extend their life and frequently extend their life to the point where really the quality of life is less than what it would have been had they chosen palliative care as opposed to additional treatment.
Then the family, there are situations where we demand treatments that do not offer benefit. Physicians and patients both want treatments that do not work, and maybe they're not worth it. And all of that coming together makes this a very complicated question to address.
It certainly does, and the question of futility of care is one that's not normally discussed with patients by their physicians. Physicians in the past have not been trained to really do that, so they're not comfortable doing that. They seem to feel that it's their obligation to inform patients of anything that could prolong their life without really looking at the quality of life issues.
Sandy, you're working on an initiative at the Center for Practical Bioethics that could be viewed as one approach to addressing this issue. And talk about that, if you would, please. We lovingly call it TPOP. Tell us what that is.
We do. Lorel, TPOP stands for Transportable Physician Orders for Patients' Preference. It is modeled after the POLST paradigm. POLST stands for Physician Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatments. And it is something that was crafted in Oregon approximately 20 years ago and has been spreading throughout the states. And we brought the model here under the acronym of TPOP about 5 years ago, have done a lot of research, did a pilot project in Topeka that is ongoing, and anticipate introducing the concept as well as the how-tos to the medical community in 2012.
So this is something where it is a physician order. And it is something where an individual is able to make a choice on what kind of treatments they want when they're a frail type of individual, correct?
It is, of course, very useful to older adults who are frail and who may be experiencing the end days of a disease, but it isn't used exclusively for older adults. What it does do is two very important things. Number one, it honors the individual's autonomy to make real-time decisions based on their medical conditions at that time, because it's based on a conversation between the patient and the physician, because, as you indicated, it does result in a physician order set.
Now, this is something where a common term is cost-effective care. And, Harvey, do people, I think, intellectually can understand that, but when it comes to having cost-effective care, which may mean less care, do people respond negatively to that?
Well, they may, but it doesn't necessarily mean less care. It can mean more collaborative arrangements between healthcare providers to provide care more efficiently and to provide care which involves the patient and the family more than is currently done under current practice.
Sandy, do you ever deal with that issue around the issue of cost-effective care and how people view that phrase?
Well, there's, I think, a natural pushback on that, Laurel, because when I think about my care or you think about your care, we want the care that is best for us, and we want the care that we want. And many people assume that somehow someone's going to pay for it, so it isn't in the equation. But when we have that conversation on a population-based forum or in a population-based forum, then people start to shine a very different light on the whole idea of cost-effectiveness. Our interest here at the center, particularly with TPOP, is to say, let's take a couple steps back and let's honor the autonomy of the patient. And for a person who doesn't want a certain kind of care, regardless of how much it costs, let's first look at their wishes and the wishes of their family.
So a final question for both of you, and I'll put you on the spot first, Sandy. The lead into this was the question of whether or not there are times when it's ethically and legally okay to ration care. Are we at a point, given what we know about the demographics and the dollars, are we at a point of answering that question?
My response, Laurel, is from the point of autonomy, from the perspective of autonomy of the individual. And if we allow people to make the choices they want, which will include declining care that they are not interested in, there may in fact be a cost savings. But I think if first we look at the individual, the family, and make sure that they get the care that's effective and works for them and that they want, things will begin to come into balance.
Harvey, same question.
Yeah, I don't think that rationing is really necessary as long as the change in the culture can be brought about by better education of physicians, families, and patients. I think if that is done, the cost savings will be so significant that it will be really unnecessary to even begin to even continue any discussion of rationing.
Harvey Tettelbaum is a partner with Hush Blackwell Law Firm in Jefferson City, Missouri. Sandy Silva is a program associate with the Center for Practical Bioethics. I'm Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.